This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated.
This is GamesAtWork.biz, episode 58, Zombies vs. Mummies, and was recorded Friday, August 23rd, 2013. Hello, and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm coming to you from my home office here in Budapest, Hungary, and I am happy to be back in the podcasting seat and accompanied by my co-host, Phaedra Boynodiris, over there in Raleigh, yes, exactly.
Carrie, but close enough. Close. Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing terrific. And I can see, because I'm looking through the little video here, that you have somebody sitting there with you.
I do indeed. I am joined here by my guest, Porter Stowell, who is also in the serious game space. Welcome, Porter, to our show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Porter, welcome. So we've got a fun show to talk about today because you've had some interesting travels. I've had some interesting travels. Our other co-host, Michael, is having some interesting meetings. At least we hope they're interesting. So he won't be joining us today. So tell us a little bit about your trip to Seattle, Phaedra.
Indeed. This was a very special week. This was the week of the Serious Play Summit. And this is a conference that is really meant for people, practitioners specifically in the serious games space. So just to give you a sense, I opened up day one with a workshop to talk about what corporations are doing in serious games, and the audience was full of speaker badges. So really, it was an interesting mix. From defense through banking through insurance through serious game studios and publishers, really just a very big mix of folks. It was very, very, very well put on. There was, of course, the thought leader behind Flow, the philosophy of Flow and the psychology of Flow. Mihaly was there, as well as Nolan Bushnell was a keynote. We had people from DARPA and the U.S. Army, the Department of Defense. It was just a fantastic, very high-quality presentation set of presentations. I just wanted to give you guys some highlights of talks that really struck me.
Yes, please.
In addition to the incredible keynotes, one was a talk by a friend of mine, Rob Smith, who is a serious games producer at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And I gotta share with everybody, and I've invited him to be on the show, so I'd like to sign him up as a guest.
Awesome. Hey, Ross, but, come join us.
Yes, he will. He promised me. So he's doing something really, really cool, and I don't want to give too much away because I want him to speak about it on the show. But in essence, making a building a game master. So imagine this. How is it that you might be able to trick out a building such that it is engaging with employees, with people within the building much more than ever before? Like, let's say you want people to be more active. You want people to take the stairs. You want people to drink more from the water fountain. Get this. Get what they did. They would put sensor devices next to the water fountain with a screen, okay?
Yes.
And if people weren't drinking from the water fountain every 7 minutes,
yes,
the water fountain would start to get sad. And it would start to make these noises like, and it would do this little frowny face until you go up to the water fountain and drink from it. And it would have card scanners so you could be able to track how many times you drank from the water fountain, how many times you climbed the stairs, and the building would start to interact with you. And they gave the buildings names and personalities and backstories.
So I have to ask this question. I have to.
I feel like I have the same question. We're going to let you go.
So when you would drink from the water fountain, would it say, glad to be of service?
I think the water fountain should have personalities too, like little moods. What was it from A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Exactly. The robot.
Exactly.
I mean, and how far do they take this? Like, when you go to the bathroom, do they tell you need a little bit more protein in your diet?
Not yet. That's phase two. But he was telling me that the interns he brought in to help work on this were so jazzed, so enthusiastic. As we were drinking some beers, he gets a text from one of his interns that says he tricked out with sensor devices his own house. He said he had a 4-year-old who was too scared to go up the stairs at night by himself to his room.
Right.
So he had sensors underneath the carpet going up the steps. So as he goes up the stairs, the music is piped in, music changes, and it gets, you know, louder and more interesting as you go up the stairs at night. And then, you know, lights turning on and music playing in the room, so he's no longer afraid and he's motivated to go up. I just think I thought it was super cool. Very interesting.
So I'll have to dig this up. But Bill Gates's house that he described in his book in, gosh, the late 80s, early 90s. I'll have to dig for a little bit. You know, there was a CD-ROM that came with it as well. Described a lot of these kind of things, that the environment would sense who you are and would adapt itself to you as you walked around. It would know that you were Renoir, you know, or you liked various music in the classical space versus punk rock or whatever, and it would adapt to you. So I could see that these are some of the same ideas that have just rolled forward. The one thing that kind of grabs me though is that. That using a card to swipe and so on would be a little too intrusive. I think that you really need to have some sort of, you know, RFID sort of thing where your phone or a wristband or something that you're wearing identifies already who you are, where you are, and then the building begins to interact with you that way and could interact with you via text, via, you know, push notification. Think about the vending machines for that matter too. Boy, you look pretty thirsty. How would you like to have 50 cents off of your next soft drink, you know, product?
Seriously.
Very cool.
Or rewards, like, you know, we noticed that you, I don't know, completed X amount of charity or mentoring this month, so you're going to get a free soda.
Yeah,
I don't know,
a surprise that comes out of the blue, right?
Yeah,
or that to help you get acquainted with a new building. Maybe there's a little scavenger hunt it has you potentially engage yourself in.
He was also – he talked about stretching this thought into municipalities. So, for example, if you contributed towards cleaning up a park, because, of course, that's where budgets have been cut too, mm-hmm. right? If you contributed, maybe that means for the next month you can go through the toll booth toll free and then have this be a seamless – and I said, okay, but how do you prove that you cleaned up the park? And we sort of paused and we're drinking and he's like, selfies? Take a picture.
Yes, yes.
Cleaning up. I don't know.
Facial recognition from a street level cameras.
I don't know.
Interrogated by.
I think that needs to be worked out. But I like the idea of having these systems seamless so that the rewards that you get, you know, it could be almost like surprises. Okay, you don't have to pay the toll today. Your city thanks you.
Yeah.
Well, there is an ongoing effort that's trying to tap into crowds participation in charitable events. It's called the Hope Campaign. So they put on a big concert in Central Park every. They just had the first one last year. They had Will.i.am and all these big name stars come and perform, and it was a free concert in Central Park as long as you had participated in a volunteer fashion for a goal, you know, whether it's an NGO or a community or charity event, and that gave you free admission to this concert. And it was a huge success, created a lot of buzz in the media and entertainment world, and it really rewarded people for their contribution. So you can see that the components of this are being tested in the market. place, which is really exciting.
That's so cool. And I think that helps to really set the stage for how do you do the proof part, right? You know, you could do that via a Foursquare check-in, right? There's an event that's happening on a particular space. We're cleaning up this stretch of the river, and you know the GPS location device on your phone for that event, that time frame. You're checked in. You're checked in with other people. There you go.
Now, if you're the mayor of that Foursquare event, could you then adjudicate, like, okay, yes, all these people were here, and I'll give them credit?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, you could just change it slightly so that by checking in, you need to be, yes, you are actually here. The event organizer recognizes you. You've probably just come up with something here that is a Foursquare extension that could be added.
So, Foursquare, if you're listening, we'll discuss. You never know, right?
I never know. So it was very, very interesting. Some other highlights of the show, a lot of discussion around business models of serious games and platforms. You know, we've discussed the free-to-play model on this show before, but, you know, a lot of discussion about cloud and new tools. For example, one project that was shown was 3D Game Labs, which is in essence a gamification platform for curriculum that a whole bunch of educators around the country are now utilizing. And it's in essence, it's the badge system plus ranking plus reputation, but it's all, you know, a canned platform for people to be able to use, and apparently it's free. So that's interesting. Again, more and more of a push in that direction. A lot of discussion about gamification versus serious games. So this camp is certainly trying to separate themselves from gamification, whereas I know the Gamification Summit folks run by Gabe Zipperman is really trying to put serious games under the gamification umbrella and call it all one thing. So there's, you know, some politics going on in there.
Yeah, who's a subset of whom, right? You know, that's the standard sort of thing. And serious games have been around for much longer than gamification. And we can do the angels on the head of a pin conversation around this, too, for a while.
Exactly. So people are still trying to figure things out. And there is a lot of confusion. There was talk about the dismay from serious games folks that now customers who got burned with poorly executed gamification now are saying, forget it, we already tried that. We already tried games, when in fact all they did was try a bad implementation of gamification with just badges. And so they're sort of writing it all off. So there were some vendors who were voicing their frustration in that regard.
How did the media focus on the summit, or did they, to your knowledge?
They did. There was quite a bit of press there, taking pictures and blogging and tweeting about it. The interest, the conversations that I saw with regards to where they want to take the summit next is because they're recognizing that this is really an expert conference, that there's going to be more of a deep dive into answering big questions around the evolution of the space. Like, for example, gaming as a service on the cloud, you know, that would be a topic of conversation, a question that there could be a whole series of talks around. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that there could be some really meaty reports coming out after it. Because at a summit like this, if you say, here's why you need to pay attention to games, that's not the audience.
No, it seemed to me the way you described it with, you know, all the badges in your audience, that it was much more of a collaboration experience versus a presentation experience.
It was very much a social networking opportunity, figuring out new partners, who's doing what, and really bolstering each other. That's what it feels like. So it was good. It was always fun. It's always fun.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's
and we got a whole slew of potential guest speakers ready to come on this show, so we're going to line them up.
Well, that's what we need to do, one right after the other. Now, You had said that the guy who had worked on Dragonbox and a few of the other games was also there as part of our pre-show conversation, right?
Yes, indeed. Zoran Popovich was there from the University of Washington, as was his funder, DARPA. So Colonel Russell Schilling from DARPA was there as well. So Zoran got up and he was talking about his experience with Folded and with Dragonbox and Refraction, which is a super cool Fraction game. He's just rolled out Refraction 2. And one of the things that I remember stuck in my mind and resonated was to always start off the project thinking and talking and fleshing about the business case and metrics, because your measurements associated with your return on investment and what you need to give back to your investor has to be built into the design of the game. So, for example, with Foldit, he needed to be able to prove that the AI would get smarter, right? As people play the game, the AI would be able to start thinking about protein structures that were better than if it had been uninformed via the game. So the design had to be able to relay measurements. And so he kept reiterating, which is something that I've talked about a lot too, is that you've got to always start off these projects thinking about business value and your return on investment. So that was good.
You know, that leads us right into the continuation of last week's show, too, that you and Michael had fortunately for me, I was still on vacation, talking about ethics and talking about how do you convey to a player of a casual or serious game that is designed to be learning in the way that you've just described from a folded kind of mechanism to improve itself and to get better and provide business value to the creator of that game. How do we square the ethics around that? And you started to touch on that, and then it was kind of toward the end of the show. So I'm eager to pick up where you left off, share a few thoughts. And I know, Michael, when you're back with us, or you may do this on Twitter, or you may do this directly on the show website as well, you may collaborate with us this way. What is your line of thinking, and were there some different points of view from the summit that you heard as well on the ethics?
So this is very, very early on in the conversation, because it's just now that we're really starting to see more and more examples of this. And just to give a little bit of history, I think this really started in essence with games like the ESP game or applications like CAPTCHA. A reCAPTCHA, right? So just for the audience members who aren't familiar, the ESP game was a game built by Carnegie Mellon where, in essence, two screens are looking at a picture of the same object. And the point of the game is I've got to figure out what is the person on the other screen going to name the object that I'm looking at, that we're both looking at, and vice versa. And the faster we can come up with the same word structure for that object, the better, the more points that we both get. And so who ends up purchasing the license for that game? Google.
Yep.
And they did that because they wanted a way of being able to meta tag images within their library. And so that's what they ended up doing, is they purchased the license for that game, and then they ended up utilizing it to meta tag, I think it was like 70% of their image library.
And incidentally, you know, that is now available as part of the Awesomizer, so that if you take a picture that's uploaded directly to your Google Drive, it's passed through those filters and it will identify for you the building, the mountain, the places that you've taken these pictures are because of those tags and because of this game.
Right, which is very super cool. Mm-hmm. And CAPTCHA, if you see, you know, those little scribbles when you register for an account on Facebook or LinkedIn, you'll see a little scribble. If you see one of them, it proves that you're not a spider on, a bot on the net. If you see two of them, you're actually helping to digitize a piece of text in the Library of Congress. So here's those are early examples of games or applications where you're contributing to work product without even realizing you're doing it.
Right.
And so since then, we've seen games like Foldit, and now more and more games out of that are being funded by DARPA, where they're casual games that are directly contributing to work product. And some my thought is, and what I've heard from Zoran, is that when your audience is uninformed about who's actually benefiting from this, and then you decide to tell them midway, you will disenfranchise your audience. They will get completely ticked off, and they'll say, "You know what? I didn't sign up for this, so some corporation could benefit."
Right.
There has to be, in my estimation, some level of a disclosure as to why somebody would want to take the time to do this. You know, if it is being sponsored by a corporation or whatnot, it just gets to be a slippery slope. If you don't disclose and someone finds out, you're going to be in big trouble. In essence, is my thought on the matter.
Yeah, I had the same general philosophy as well. I think that the reward you get from playing the casual game in a lot of ways is the entertainment value. So you are gaining something from it. You wouldn't play a casual game if it didn't provide you entertainment value to begin with. However, if there were something beyond that, like what we've talked about on the
unless you have been given a message that the purpose of your game is to actually solve a big common humanity problem, like, you know, for altruistic purposes, like Foldit, for example.
Or the Community Grid or SETI at Home or those
exactly.
kinds of things, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are aspects of this. I'll give you another example. I've talked about my love of Waze lots of times here. In a lot of ways, Waze is a game, and my contributions to that game is that I am able to give something back to now Google, who's acquired the company, to improve the mapping and the road structure and the directions for everybody else who uses it. In fact, so much so that today and yesterday, I was driving on a road and I was sure to say, "Up, there's a construction problem here," and I'm registering it so that other people who are on the same road will see it, because I know that they're not going to get this pothole filled right away. And I was a little disappointed this morning when I drove the same road and I was expecting the alert to say, "Oh, there's a pothole coming and it's under construction," and it didn't tell me, you know?
Yep.
Almost to where I was. Well, no, I was disappointed because, like, look, I've given you something valuable and you didn't use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there has to be some level of feedback. I concur.
Porter, what are your thoughts on the ethics here? Have you given this much thought?
I haven't. It's such a new topic. And, you know, I think what you guys bring up a good point is, a lot of people just want to have their opinion heard and have it be recognized. When you're talking about the pothole incident, when you're providing something free of charge and out of the goodness of your heart, you want to be recognized for that gift. But I don't think that's really an ethical issue, but it's almost, you could be talking about the duty of the person or the controller you're providing that information to take your comments and feedback seriously. And that could be an ethical issue. And ultimately, if you're ignoring those little aspects of feedback that you get from your players, eventually you'll deteriorate your brand to the point where they won't want to participate.
Right. And I think also this is a good opportunity, a good point in time to bring up Ender's Game mm-hmm. as just sort of the quintessential example of this.
Yep.
Where, you know, you've got these kids playing, they don't even realizing exactly what their gameplay means until much, much later. And so there is an ethical question with that. And I think as technology gets more and more sophisticated, there's going to be this question of ethics is going to weigh harder, more heavily on game designers' shoulders. You know, the level of transparency for how things are built, how scoring works, what is relayed. Game designers are going to need to take this burden on more and more.
And I did see, and I don't remember exactly how long ago, but I did see some commentary on the World Community Grid that was exactly in line with this, where there were there's a method of saying, sign me up for whatever projects are out there, right? So we can use the screensaver and idle cycles of my computer, not exactly a game, but it's related, to solve problems. So there could very well be games, casual games, that are puzzle games and the like, that might solve problems in a similar fashion to what Foldit does or Community Grid, et cetera. And if you have a setting that says accept whatever projects might come along, there may well be a project that comes along that you would not be in support of.
Like the Death Star. That would be bad. Who wants to build the Death Star?
But, like, there's a way to spin the Death Star with, like, someone could spin the Death Star as something very, this is for the greater good of humanity.
We're protecting against aliens.
We are going to build a intergalactic.
But it blows up planets. It doesn't blow up
I know, but
spaceships.
If you just leave out this massive laser and you talked about all the other good things it's going to do.
Yes.
There's a way, like.
Spin it.
Yeah, there's a way to spin the Death Star.
You want the Death Star because it's good for you.
Well, no one. I'm sure, like, that they didn't go out with, like, they're calling it the Death Star. They probably called it, like, something else to their contract.
The Interplanetary Protection System.
Yes.
I bet they called it Star Wars. What do you think?
Likely. Brought to you by North Carolina State Legislature.
I can't remember if it was Clerks or Chasing Amy, or they had, like, this whole debate on the contractors working on the Death Star. You're not going to get contractors to go build a Death Star. You need to call it something else.
Right. Exactly. Good point. Something with eight words in it.
Yeah. But it's catchy, Death Star.
It's catchy. A few acronyms. Well, synthetic, synthesized, simulated, yeah. something. Anyway.
The second one, right? You have to come up with a name for the second one. Two would just not cut it, right? You know, it's Death Star 2, please. So I'm sure Michael will have more to think and say about this from an ethics standpoint, because I could hear in last week's show he was just eager to jump in on that conversation. So we may have harem on that next time. That's my bad Hungarian pronunciation for three. So we'll see what Michael has to say, but at least Fader, it seems like you and I are pretty much in line, and Porter, it seems like you are too, that disclosure is key, right? If you're going to play a game and the output of that game will be used for whatever purposes, it's best for the player to know what it is as they start to play it versus finding out halfway through that they're helping to build the Death Star.
Right. Exactly.
I hope you guys invite me back for the podcast where we discuss Ender's Game, the movie. Because I do think that is a great example.
We all need to see this together.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, you'll have to take in a webcam, you know, just sneak it in under your coat and just, you know, kind of show it there.
And you'll bail me out of prison. That works for me.
Yeah, they'll, when they flash up the sign, it's like, okay, this was filmed and shown in Carmike Theaters in Kerry.
You're in Budapest. You'll probably be able to see it before Phaedra and I can.
I don't know. I read the book, and I am thinking I will be disappointed in the movie because that always happens.
I'm with you.
All right, so why don't we round out the show with a couple of other maybe slightly fun things in addition to all the fun stuff we've just talked about. As you know, and as you said, I was on vacation last week. So how does someone who loves games and serious games and casual games and so on spend their vacation? They spend it playing games. So there you go. So I started digging into a few new ones that I had not had an opportunity to play with before. And I wanted to share with you some insights. I don't know. Maybe that's too strong of a word on some of these games that I started playing, iOS games I started playing. So the first of all of the three, four that I want to mention is Sid Meier's Pirates. I've been a Sid Meier's fan ever since the early days of Civilization. And I saw come across the screen not too long ago a sale on the Sid Meier's Pirates game, and I thought to myself, this looks like it could be a lot of fun on an iPad space, you know, size device. And it was. And you get to pilot around a ship. You get to create relationships with a variety of nationalities, the Dutch, the Spanish, the English. You get to go and rescue damsels in distress. You get to take out pirates. You get to find buried treasure. You rescue your long-lost uncle and aunt. So it's some good fun as simulators go, and makes it very, very easy on a touchscreen device to drive your ship around. So I had some fun with that one, and Sid Meier's is always done some neat games, and I know this is an old one. I never played it on the PC, but I enjoyed it so far. I have not been able to win it, though. That's even on the easy game. The way the end game is supposed to work is you will retire from your days of piracy. You will be married to one of the governor's daughters on one of the in Martinique or Barbados or somewhere, and then you will live out the rest of your life in relative comfort because of all your ill-gotten gains. And I've never managed to get all the way through. I've rescued all my relatives, but I have not caught the big bad guy who, you know, took them out in the first place. So I don't know if that's a bug or if that's just my inability to get where I need to go. So, Pirates. The second one I wanted to talk about was Plants vs. Zombies 2. And I'm sure Michael has gotten this already on the first day it came out. It came out last week. Have either of you two played Plants vs. Zombies ever?
Yes.
Okay. I have not.
You have not. Okay. Well, and Phaedra, have you looked at or seen this next version of it, or did you have?
I have not, but I want to. I want to download it.
Yeah. So do. It's now an Electronic Arts game, right? So PopCap was acquired by Electronic Arts. There's a lot of stuff in the press about what's going on, but the game finally did emerge, and it is very, very playable. So it is a free-to-play game. You are able to go to the store, and some people will characterize it as buying cheats. I don't know if I would say it's buying cheats. There are ways you can accelerate your way through the game by mm-hmm. buying certain stars and other characteristics that allow you to move from the ancient Egypt, which is where you start. It's a time travel game. So you start in ancient Egypt with Egyptian mummy zombies, which wouldn't a mummy be a zombie to begin with anyway? They're dead. I don't know. I'm not that up on my zombie terminology.
Zombies have viruses, though. Mummies don't have viruses.
Yeah, but you could be a zombie. You could be. Well, I mean, if an articulated mummy is by definition a dead person walking around, which is a zombie, right?
I don't know. I thought zombies were always infected with something that made, like, uncurable, that made their body, their flesh dead, and their brain only work in one certain kind of pattern. But maybe you're right. Maybe a mummy is a kind of zombie. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know.
Such a... insightful discussions here on the podcast.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
This is what we do, Porter. You know, we go every which way.
So, zombies versus mummies. Finally, the answer.
All right, maybe that's the show title right there. We'll get to it. So I've enjoyed it so far. I've not bought any of the old plants that you had from the first game. Some of the mini games in it are interesting. They're little concentration games where you've got to match, you know, turn over two cards and that they have to match. And if they do, then those zombies disappear and more zombies come. So you have to continuously battle hordes of zombies that way. So I'm finding it pretty good so far, and I'm moving along. I'm just still in ancient Egypt because I have not collected all the stars to unlock the warp portal or time portal or, you know, the 15th doctor or whatever it needs to help me get to the next space. So I think after the ancient Egypt, it's pirates and pirate zombies. So maybe there's a linkage between the two.
Could be. I see HR applications. Talent management systems.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, please find the two requirements that are equivalent, and so you can do them. The last one that I'll mention, well, second to last, is this one called Motor World. And this is an app that, or a little game that my boys actually have been playing for a while, and their cousins were playing too. So the way this little app works, and Mike will say, yeah, there goes Michael again on his 8-bit kind of stuff. It's not quite 8-bit. I might say it's like 16, even 32. It's got more colors than that. But you are put in charge of a car factory. And you have a technology tree, which allows you to do research in different ways. You can say, well, can I have 3 or 4 workers work on a car at the same time versus just 2? You're able to create new cars, new car designs, which is kind of cool. So you can have an electric hybrid car that's created, or a convertible, or a station wagon. And you build them by building the car as it goes through its stages of development in the factory. And then it comes out of the factory, it lands on the showroom floor, and you're able then to set the price of the car, and you can kind of gauge a little supply and demand with the amount of time it will take to sell said vehicle. You make your profit, and then you can do some quest related things where, you know, if you build a certain number of certain type of car, you're rewarded with special points and whatnot.
Very cool.
It's neat because of the visualizations. So you could think about a manufacturing process. I had the chance to go to Munich on my vacation and go to the BMW plant there and see how they manufacture their 3 Series station wagons and sedans through their environment. It's not quite the same as this Motor World game, but you could see where if you're in a manufacturing environment, you can use a similar kind of visualization to show progression as you're going through your manufacturing line. And you might be able to show where there's a problem, and you might be able to act on it and interact with it, which could be pretty cool.
Very cool. I like it. I'll have to take a look.
And then the linkage that I will put between that and the Simpsons game is it's all about the donuts. So your workers in Motor World fall over and they kind of wiggle their feet in the air because they get tired. And the way to get them untired and back to work is you have to feed them donuts. And
that's funny.
Donuts are the premium currency in this game too. Your donuts come back over time. They regenerate. Regenerating donuts? I don't know. And you're able then to feed them to your employees, and they will level up if you give them enough donuts as opposed to what you think ought to happen if you give them too many donuts. And that's one of the mechanisms to speed up your production is to level up your employees and move them along. So it has a number of very interesting gameplay elements that I think are very applicable to visualizations from a serious game standpoint of, you know, where are we in my production line? Is my thing done yet? Who's working on it? You know, do I have the right people working on it? Should I get somebody more skilled and talented? How do I optimize my workforce? Some really interesting plays could be done here.
Very good one. Great example.
Yeah. So,
I have a game I've been playing that I'm going to riddle you guys, see if you can guess what it is.
Ah, okay, good.
So I've been playing a game. It's played by over 30 million people. It's growing at 60% year over year. It's a game where I voluntarily sift through millions of little useless pieces of data points in order to win. What game am I playing?
It's called Email.
Zing! Good answer, but no.
No. Ah, shoot. Yeah, well, it is growing. 30 million.
Growing at 60%.
And you're actually playing for fun?
For fun. Looking at sifting through data.
Sifting through data.
Bejeweled?
No.
Ah.
Minecraft.
No sifting there. Can you give us another clue? Can we phone a friend?
I'm willing. It's really big this time of year.
Ooh. So back to school.
If people play this game.
Oh yeah, your back to school purchases. You're going to Staples or Home Office Depot, and you're trying to find a protractor because that's on your shopping list for your children. Although your kids will never use that protractor, but the protractor company who's making them is happy, happy, happy. And instead,
that sounds like a very personal story.
And instead, instead of having like, okay, here is your $30 bundle of every of the binders you need, of the protractor that which you don't need but they say you need, of the rulers, every one bundle of like $30 that you could just say, I will buy that from the web page, deliver it to my school in my classroom number so and so, and don't make me have to hunt through it. That's sifting through data. That's a solution that's in need of being handled.
I'm sensing some angst, Michael. Yes. Just say it like it is.
Ah, it is. Well, you go through this too, don't you?
I do.
So, I you know, one of the things we talked about earlier in the show was, you know, this. I think it's consensus among the group here that serious games as a concept hasn't tipped in society yet, for the most part.
Yes,
it's gaining a lot of momentum. It's got some great dialogue out there with some people, but it hasn't tipped as like a really big solution for people, businesses, etc. And the game I'm playing, I think, is an integral part to getting the tip to happen in serious games, because it's something that, you know, with that many people playing it.
Tell us what?
It is fantasy football.
Of course.
With all the data, it's free to play.
That's true. It has
the social component. It is people voluntarily
optimizing teams.
Yeah, optimizing teams.
No, you're right. You're right.
So it's familiarizing people with gaming concepts and theories, even though they don't realize it. And look what it's done for the NFL as a brand.
That's a good point.
Well, it's certainly provided a level of engagement, and all the discussions that you're hearing now about second screen related activities that happen in conjunction with online games and providing stats and so on, I think you're right. It's a natural outgrowth of what you've just described.
And do you play fantasy football, Michael?
Not at all. I've limited myself to collegiate sports, and that's about it. And I've had to dial myself back to basketball. and I'll tell you, from here in Hungary, that's a little tricky to be able to watch anything related to U.S. sports right now, unless you're willing to get up at really super crazy, wacky hours of the day.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, but I get it and I understand it. I did do a little bit of baseball simulations for a while. Michael and I were early players of a game called Small Ball, where you could train up your people, and then they would go and have matches against others, and they would develop their skills by virtue of these matches. And it was kind of fun. But I haven't done much with the fantasy football because it's extremely stat heavy. And it's and while I would enjoy playing like a console, you know, Madden kind of game, if it were dumbed down enough that I didn't have to memorize the kill stroke move of, you know, left, up, up, middle, trigger, down, down, left, right, up, right, to get the ball to hike.
You sure you just didn't give us the code for Contra, the extra guys?
It's something.
I think that was.
Yeah, it could have been. I like playing the sports games on console devices like that, because that, to me, that's kind of fun. But if you get it to be too complex, then we're tricky. Like, did you ever play Tecmo Bowl?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. So that, about that level of complexity, maybe with slightly better graphics.
You have four plays to choose from.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, four plays, five plays, and you could just go there and do that for long afternoon.
Yeah. It was great.
Awesome. Well, Porter, I'm really glad that we had you around Phaedra's table today for the conversation. And Phaedra, thank you so much for giving us all the skinny and the lowdown from our colleagues and friends in Seattle, all the people who joined for that event. It was this week, right? It was earlier this week?
It was earlier this week. And so I'm going to be lining up. I'll be reaching out to some of the speakers, presenters, folks I met out there this week, and line them up for the show.
Awesome.
Stay tuned.
Wow, this is going to be a great summer and a great end of summer and great fall for all the people that you're going to connect us up with, I'm sure. Great. All right. Well, Michael, we missed you. Hope you, all of our listeners enjoyed the show. You know where to find us. We say it every time. Phaedra, you can find her on Innovate Game. You can find Michael on Michael Rowe 01. I'm on Carolina Big Blue on Twitter. Porter, where can people find you most easily? G plus Skype?
At Porter Stoll on Twitter. And I think if you find Phaedra Innovate, you'll find me as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, everyone. Give us your feedback. Tell us some things you're interested to hear more about, and we will bring them up here on the show. Thanks.
Sounds like a plan. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.